I'm going to begin this over again. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues for the next half hour. I'll be reading articles principally from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. And the first article is entitled Facial Skin Care. Cosmetic treatments can smooth wrinkles without surgery. Wrinkles can be a sign of life well lived. They might deepen each time you smile, laugh at a joke, or squint to read. While there's nothing unhealthy about wrinkles, treatments are available to help fill them in, smooth them out, and make them less visible. Wrinkles particularly appear in areas that get a lot of sun, such as the backs of your hands and your face. As skin ages, it loses elasticity, so it doesn't spring back into place like a baby's smooth skin does. Genetics, sunlight, smoking, and exposure to pollutants all contribute to signs of aging on the skin. A good skincare routine can help protect your skin and prevent wrinkles. The five steps to do daily are: wash your skin with a mild cleanser. Use a physical or chemical exfoliant to rid your skin of debris and dead skin cells. If you have sensitive skin, do this step only a few times a week. Apply a skin toner, a water-based lotion or tonic to clean and tighten your pores. Moisturize to hydrate your skin and temporarily fill in little creases. And apply sun protection to exposed areas, like your face and neck. Some moisturizers include sunscreen, combining steps 4 and 5. Even sun that shines through windows can age skin, so use sun protection every day, all year round. It's ideal to use a physical sunscreen, such as one containing zinc oxide or titanium dioxide. This creates a physical barrier against UV rays. Also, a tinted sunscreen can be nice because it's like a light layer of makeup on the skin. Here are more steps for fresher-looking skin without surgery. At-home topical creams. Moisturizers and creams are the first step in reducing wrinkles. You can get products with retinol, antioxidants, and peptides at drugstores or anywhere you buy cosmetics. Retinols and retinoids are forms of vitamin A. They are a cornerstone of wrinkle products. Retinoids are available by prescription only. With consistent use, products that contain retinols or retinoids can reduce signs of aging. The products are rubbed into the skin to reduce fine wrinkles, splotches, and roughness. But these products also can make the skin more sensitive. You may notice redness and dryness when you first start using retinol or retinoid. It takes the skin about 4 to 6 weeks to adapt so that those side effects are no longer visible, says Lila Tolemat, MD, a dermatologist at Mayo Clinic in Florida. Peeling is proof that the cream is helping the skin exfoliate properly. With continued use, better color and luster will likely emerge in a few weeks. Ramp up product use gradually if you get skin irritation. Start using it every third night, then every other night, and finally every night. Unless your dermatologist suggests otherwise, use retinol products at night, because they can be inactivated by sunlight. The sun tends to burn skin treated with these products more easily, though that can be countered by using sunscreen. Skincare products available without a prescription are classified as cosmetics, so they aren't regulated the same way that drugs are. That could mean that your product contains only a little bit of the active ingredient. Mayo Clinic experts also say that expensive products don't necessarily work better than less expensive products. Non-surgical wrinkle treatments are done by licensed professionals. Wrinkle treatments come with some risk, including swelling, redness, and irritation. A dermatologist or licensed aesthetician can help you choose the procedure that's best for you and assess your skin's health at the same time. People who are pregnant or have a weakened immune system should first talk to their healthcare team or avoid these procedures. There's a big advantage to seeking this type of care from medical professionals, as they can do the peel or injection and also are able to assess the skin in general. If there's something that is worrisome and needs a biopsy, there is an advantage to having someone skilled in medicine taking care of these things. Here are some non-surgical skin procedures to consider. The first is laser resurfacing. There are two common approaches to laser resurfacing. An ablative laser takes off the outer layer of skin and heats the underlying skin to stimulate the growth of new collagen. This leads to smoother, tighter skin as it heals. A non-ablative laser also stimulates collagen by warming the dermal layers without the peeling that comes from removing the outer layer of skin. This type of laser therapy lessens the recovery time, but the results are more subtle. Today, both methods are commonly delivered with a fractional laser, which leaves microscopic columns of untreated tissue throughout the treatment area. Fractional lasers were developed to shorten recovery time and reduce the risk of side effects. Laser resurfacing helps manage fine lines and mild skin discoloration, but is less effective for deep wrinkles. With your input, the professional can control how deep to set the laser and which areas of the skin to treat or avoid. It can take about a week for the skin to heal after a laser session. You may need repeated treatments to get the desired results. With a chemical peel, a chemical solution is applied to remove the outer layer of skin. Just as with laser resurfacing, the skin tightens and smooths as it heals. However, peels are less precise than laser resurfacing. Peels can be a little more unpredictable, depending on the thickness of the skin and where the skin is being treated. Depending on the wrinkles to treat, the dermatology professional might recommend different peel depths. For a medium or deep peel, you might need a sedative or pain medication. Immediately after your peel, your skin will likely be red, tight, and irritated. Deeper peels will take about a week to heal, with lighter peels requiring less recovery time. Good results may require more than one treatment or maintenance peels every few months. Dermabrasion uses sand-like particles to remove the outer layer of skin. This decreases the appearance of fine lines since the skin that grows back is smoother. Microdermabrasion uses even finer particles and can be used to remove scars, age spots, and tattoos. Dermabrasion can be combined with other cosmetic procedures. Like with the other procedures, it can take the skin about a week to heal, but you don't necessarily need multiple treatments. Neuromodulator injection. A neuromodulator substance interferes with nerve function and can be injected at targeted nerves in specified sites. Neuromodulators used for wrinkles are classified as cosmetic injectables. They are delivered with a thin needle into the skin. Botulinum toxin, with brand names such as Botox, Dysport, and Xeomin, is a neuromodulator that's approved for medical use to relax muscles. When the muscles relax, the skin on top appears smoother. These injections are often used between the eyebrows, across the forehead, and at the corners of the eyes. They can reduce the appearance of frown lines and other facial wrinkles for 3 to 4 months at a time. The placement of the injection must be precise. It's rare but possible for the neuromodulator to reach unintended nerves and muscle groups, affecting the movement and appearance of facial features. Other risks include allergic reactions, muscle weakness, vision problems, difficulty talking, swallowing, or breathing. Fillers are a type of injectable usually made of hyaluronic acid. Names for fillers include Restylane and Juvederm. The filler plumps the tissue, which smooths out wrinkles or softens the hills and valleys of the face, making deep lines less obvious. The fillers gradually absorb into the skin. Fillers can last for 6 months to a year, depending on the specific filler and where it's placed, Dr. Tolemat says. In a culture driven by keeping a grip on youth and vitality, fine lines and wrinkles may be an unwelcome arrival, but many people learn to accept and even embrace the signs of aging. If you are bothered by these aging signs, science can provide relatively safe ways to keep them at bay. Regular tweakments, T-W-E-A-K-M-E-N-T-S, as Dr. Bruce calls them, are one way to take care of your appearance so you can feel like yourself when you look in the mirror. And then the Mayo Clinic newsletter goes on to with a short article that's entitled, How to Treat a Nosebleed. Most everyone experiences an occasional nosebleed. It can be scary, but usually it's a minor annoyance. Common nosebleed causes can include change of seasons, dryness, scratching, certain medications and injuries. People on blood thinners may have worse nosebleeds than do others. Most nosebleeds stop on their own or stop after a few self-care steps. First thing you should do is sit upright and lean forward. By remaining upright, you reduce the pressure on the veins of your nose. This discourages further bleeding. Leaning forward will help you to avoid swallowing blood. You should pinch your nose. Use your thumb and index finger to pinch both nostrils shut, even if only one side is bleeding. Breathe through your mouth. Continue to pinch for 5 to 10 minutes. The pinching puts pressure on the bleeding point and often stops the flow of blood. If the bleeding doesn't stop, go ahead and do that again. Sit upright and lean forward and pinch your nose. Also, you should leave your nose alone. After the bleeding, don't pick or blow your nose. Also, try not to bend down for several hours. Keep your head higher than the level of your heart. Some nosebleeds require professional care. Seek medical attention if the bleeding is severe, lasts longer than 30 minutes, or interferes with your breathing. Also, have a nosebleed checked out right away if it follows an injury, like a fall or a car accident. Talk to your healthcare team if you're having nosebleeds more than once a week, even if you can stop them fairly easily. Determining the cause and avoiding risk factors or adjusting medications may make nosebleeds less likely. Now here's a useful article, also in the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, that's entitled, Eating for Digestive Health. In a perfect world, an optimal diet would involve you walking to the garden every morning, where you would pick fresh fruits and vegetables, shake free some nuts and olives from a nearby grove, and make meals by boiling or sautéing ingredients gathered from your harvest. Very few people can live that life today. For most, food comes from the grocery store, and the bulk of it undergoes some sort of processing. That's not all bad, but it's important to understand the different types of processed food. Food processing is any change to a food that alters its natural state. This includes foods that have been cut, pasteurized, cooked, frozen, or dehydrated, as well as foods that have had preservatives, nutrients, and other additives included. Some processing is necessary to make many foods edible. But extensive processing can be harmful. Today's foods can generally be divided into four categories. The first is unprocessed foods. Unprocessed foods are foods in their natural state, including the edible parts of plants, the edible parts of animals, and other natural foods like mushrooms. Minimally processed foods are those that have been cooked or altered slightly in some way, like being dried or fermented. Foods in this category are the ones that you want to eat the most because they typically contain many nutrients. Processed culinary ingredients. These are products extracted from nature, often used as seasonings like sea salt, molasses, honey, butter, and pressed oils from olives and sunflower. Some of these foods have added vitamins, minerals, or preservatives. Then there are processed foods. Foods in this group include relatively simple products made by adding sugar, oil, salt, or other processed culinary ingredients. The main purpose of processing foods is to increase the durability of natural foods or to enhance their sensory qualities, like their taste and their texture. When you cook a homemade meal, you are processing food. Processed foods also include those that have undergone preservation methods like canning. These methods aren't necessarily bad, but it's important to read nutrition labels to limit added sugar and sodium. When looking at ingredient lists, aim for products made with ingredients that you recognize as food. Without unrecognizable additives. Ultra-processed foods. These foods undergo a higher level of processing. They've manufactured for taste and convenience. Ultra-processed foods are generally high in sugar, oils, fats, salts, and preservatives. They contain less natural food, and healthful nutrients are often extracted during processing. Examples include soft drinks, frozen pizza, chips, ice cream, and prepackaged baked goods. Ultra-processed foods are pro-inflammatory and can damage your health. Being aware of these foods can help you to limit their consumption. For decades, researchers have understood the importance of a diet high in fiber to aid digestion, lower bad cholesterol, and achieve a healthy weight. A recent study suggests a big reason why these benefits accrue when you eat whole foods and why they don't if your diet is high in ultra-processed foods, the gut microbiome. The gut microbiome is made up of trillions of microorganisms. When the gut microbiome is not balanced, disease risk is higher. A gut rich in healthy bacteria may lower the risk of inflammatory disease, like irritable bowel syndrome, obesity, and colon cancer. In the study, two groups of participants ate a diet with roughly the same number of calories, fats, carbohydrates, and protein. People in one group got most of their calories from ultra-processed foods, while the other ate plant-based, high-fiber foods and little or no ultra-processed food. Researchers found that ultra-processed foods digest quickly and easily, and digestion happens higher in the digestive tract. Higher fiber foods break down more slowly, which allows them to travel further down the digestive tract into the microbiome that's primarily located in the large intestine. Those in the study who ate the high fiber diet felt full more quickly, a key benefit of the slow digestive process that's tied to successful weight control. Their counterparts who ate highly processed food remained hungry longer, probably due to empty calories being absorbed faster. In earlier times, a person's fiber intake was higher due to less food processing. Today, most people don't get enough fiber. Current guidelines recommend a daily fiber intake of 25 grams a day for women and 38 grams for men. but average fiber consumption among Americans is only 17 grams per day. This means that most Americans are missing out on fiber benefits. Fiber lowers blood pressure, blood sugar, and cholesterol. It's linked to cancer prevention. Plus, it fills you up on fewer calories and helps prevent constipation. Diets low in fiber have been linked with higher risk of early death. Foods high in fiber include citrus fruits, apples, pears, most vegetables, beans and peas, oatmeal and oat bran, wheat bran, and whole grain bread. As part of your efforts to improve your diet, try to limit ultra-processed foods while focusing more on minimally processed or natural foods. By doing so, you can obtain essential nutrients naturally found in foods, including fiber. At the grocery store, surf the perimeter first. That's where most fresh and minimally processed foods can be found. Now turning to a brief section called Second Opinion, again in the Mayo Clinic health letter. I saw that a blood test is now available to the public to check for Alzheimer's risk. Is it reliable? You're right that blood tests are now available to claim the ability to detect Alzheimer's disease before symptoms such as memory loss have started. The first of these tests was marketed to the United States consumers in the summer of 2023. However, Mayo Clinic experts say that at this point, these expensive new tests have flaws and are not the best approach if you're concerned about developing Alzheimer's disease. In the past, an Alzheimer's disease diagnosis could only be certain after death. That's because diagnosis involved looking at brain tissue with a microscope to spot plaques composed of the protein amyloid beta and tangles made of the protein tau. Thanks to developments in biomarker tests, medical professionals and researchers can now detect the presence of plaques and tangles with high certainty while a person is living. Biomarker testing includes specific types of PET scans and tests that measure amyloid beta and tau proteins in the blood and cerebrospinal fluid. Still, testing for Alzheimer's disease at a medical facility is a multi-step, complex process. The current direct-to-consumer tests use only one measure of potential Alzheimer's risk, amyloid beta levels in the blood. While this is important, the presence of high amyloid beta levels alone is not sufficient for diagnosing Alzheimer's disease or for predicting risk. One major study showed that using this measure alone, 1 in 4 people in the target group, people over age 50, with a family history of the disease, would be misdiagnosed. Further, not enough research has been done or made publicly available on these tests to know their effectiveness in the general population, particularly among those with other medical conditions that may influence the test findings. The tests are not approved by the Food and Drug Administration. The best thing to do is, if you're concerned about Alzheimer's disease, discuss this with your healthcare team. Your team is equipped with experience and expertise to provide a more accurate and thorough assessment. My husband and I saw these UV wand cleaning devices. Are they a good idea? No. Although ultraviolet light devices are sometimes used in hospitals to sanitize against certain infectious organisms like C. difficile and MRSA, they're strongly discouraged for at-home use. In fact, the FDA put out warning about 8 common at-home UV wand sanitizing products, citing very high levels of light that can damage your skin and your eyes. The wands use UVC radiation, a type of UV light. This type of light effectively disinfects surfaces that may harbor many infectious microorganisms. However, the needed strength of UVC light has serious risks. In its warning, the FDA said that products marketed to disinfect in seconds generally contain unsafe levels of UVC light. FDA researchers found from 2 inches away, the devices emit up to 3,000 times the amount of UVC known to be safe for humans. Exposure to excessive levels of UVC light has been linked to skin burns and discoloration and photokeratitis, a burn in the cornea. Photokeratitis can feel like your eyes are being rubbed in sand. It also occurs as snow blindness, which, due to unfiltered light exposure in extremely bright, snowy landscapes. Both the skin and eye effects can occur after just seconds of UVC light exposure. Leave the use of UVC devices to professionals. You're safer using traditional methods of germ cleaning, like regular washing with soap or detergent combined with consistent air circulation. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.